Welcome to the Turning Point podcast series. The NATO Cooperative Cyber Defense Center of Excellence recently published a study that points to how cross-border dependencies create additional cyber vulnerabilities when it comes to infrastructure protection. Today we have the unique pleasure of speaking with Lisa Past, who's actually a spokesperson for the NATO Cooperative Cyber Defense Center of Excellence, as well as Kadri Kaska, who is a researcher at the organization and was also an author of this paper. And Lisa and Kadri, how are you both doing today?
Doing well. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you for having us on your program.
Hello, Matthew.
Excellent. Well, thanks for both of you for taking the time today. And let's start off on a top level, and this question's for Lisa. Give us an overview. Tell us about the NATO Cooperative Cyber Defense Center of Excellence.
The center comes from the NATO's framework of centers of excellence, which is a way for allies, whichever one of them or a community of allies, to take leadership in research and development as well as trainings within a field. There's close to 20 centers of excellence across the alliance, and we're the only one that's focused on cyber defense. We have staffing and funding from almost 20 nations at this point, and what makes us unique is that we have lawyers, policy experts, high-level strategy experts, and technology experts working together. So quite often as a knowledge hub, a training center, or a think tank, which is our basic functions, we'll be answering questions that either NATO itself or a member nation has asked us from a number of perspectives. The lawyers would look at whether something is possible, let's say a response to a cyber incident is legal in international law. The technology experts would look at what's technically doable. In terms of bits and bytes, can we offer, which responses we can offer? But those quite often are wider than what the nations would be willing to do, which is why we have strategy and policy analysts to then see what's technically possible, what's legal, and what's also practical in terms of politics. And it's important to know that we are a research institution, so we're able to look at the challenges laying ahead for NATO itself and allies, rather than look at the everyday operational aspects. NATO itself is in charge of protecting its networks, but we're the people who ask the long-term questions and hopefully give the answers as well.
That's great. Thank you for those insights there, Lisa. Now let's switch over to Kadri. Tell us about the study that we're highlighting here in this interview about cyber vulnerabilities when it comes to infrastructure protection. Give us a little overview of this research, please.
So our obvious starting point is that the provision of publicly available services is increasingly dependent on electronic communications networks, it's dependent on electronic information systems, and these processes obviously are market-driven. The efficiency considerations, being able to offer a more convenient service, so there are clear benefits associated with this evolution. And together with that, we are also becoming more dependent on the reliability of such information infrastructure. So now globalization creates another layer of complexity in this picture, since the service that is operated in one country may depend upon the reliability of information systems that are located in another country. So when we come now to the topic of critical information infrastructure, which was the object of this study, the vast majority of such services are provided by private enterprises, and then these often operate across several national markets and across national borders. So obviously the national security interest is to ensure that such vital services remain available and that the undertakings would shield themselves from risks that they may prefer from a business perspective to tolerate, or that they may not even consider because of the impact doesn't necessarily happen in the location where the service control of the service is happening. So
No, keep going. I was going to ask you about some of the risks that you highlighted in the study, but by all means, please keep going. You're sharing some great information here, Kadri.
Thank you. So what we looked into this, or what we looked into when we were researching this this topic, we looked into how nations, most of them in Europe, are addressing their dependency of the information infrastructure located in other countries. So I'm sorry, I got lost here.
That's okay,
so,
no problem.
The point in doing it comparatively across different nations was that taking care of the issue domestically alone will not secure us. Nations need to be aware of how others are doing this, how they are approaching those and mitigating those vulnerabilities, and to be able to cooperate and in order to prevent and, if necessary, manage emergencies arising out of those, or based on affected or impacted by this particular issue.
Perfect. That's great. Now let's shift, like we said, to some of the risks that you highlighted in the study that we thought were pretty interesting, and it was a wide range from technological, legal, financial, and even social and cultural. So please, if you don't mind, give us a quick rundown on some of the risks that you highlighted in the study.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are the risks that are specific to cyber infrastructure in general, because those still apply, never mind the location. And then there are those risks that are specific to the cross-border element. And then, of course, there are certain specifics that are relevant to, and applicable to each particular sector. The risks that the financial sector is facing are different from those that are faced by the healthcare sector, for example. But specifically for the cross-border aspect and the cross-border vulnerabilities, our respondents, the experts from 12 different national authorities across NATO nations, they pointed out technological risks. And some of those are risks that are relevant to several countries simultaneously, such as damage to undersea communications cables or satellites, or the risk of disruption of a regional network exchange node, for example, or disruption in the electrical grid. So such risks may come both from natural hazards and as well as human activity, be it intentional or caused by human error. Then there are the legal risks, which included, as was pointed out, the differences in regulation, the lack of equivalent security standards, also the issues with cross-border legal cooperation to investigate and prosecute malicious actors, for example. And financial aspects, sufficient funding seems to be always be a concern. But we were surprised to the extent that the national experts emphasized concerns arising out of differences in national security cultures. So national differences in threat perception, lack of trust between nations, but also between the different actors and regulators on the national level. Lack of information sharing about prevention, own vulnerabilities, threat response, so those sort of issues. And of course, as an umbrella risk, the rising complexity of society was seen as an inherent factor that would impact the choice of measures that different nations employ to address such cross-border dependencies.
Interesting. Thanks for those insights. Now, this might be a challenging question because it certainly sounds like a wide range of risks and challenges there, but what are some of the solutions for this? I guess both from a technological and a socio-political point of view, in your opinion.
Well, as communicated by our national experts that collaborated in the study, there are very few distinguishable measures today in national law that directly deal with the cross-border dependencies. We only had actually three nations that pointed out certain specific legal obligations to assess and mitigate such risks. But in addition to the clear-cut legal requirements for cross-border dependencies, we shouldn't overlook the significance of other measures for critical information infrastructure and critical infrastructure protection in general. And all of the countries that we included in the review consider risks of critical information infrastructure in their national emergency preparedness system, and many carry out systematic risk assessments that are required and do take into account all relevant hazards, cyber included and cross-border included, if those are relevant to the particular service. What we expect is that our study will improve national awareness about this topic, also driven by the experts from the national authorities that collaborated with us in the study. So we expect to see more attention to cross-border dependencies, both domestically among the nations that are partners in the NATO CCD, COE, and hopefully also beyond. And of course, we expect more attention to this topic in international discussion and international collaboration and cooperation among states, both with regard to information sharing and the development of, for example, international rules of conduct, standards, and perhaps also norms in this area.
That's great. Well, thank you for those insights. And my last question for both Lisa and Kadri, is there anything else that you'd like to add? I'm sure we could talk about this study for hours, which is great. It's a wonderful study. But in the interest of time, anything else that we missed today before we sign off?
As a more general observation, perhaps, my own conclusion or insight out of this research endeavor was that the vital service dependency on cross-border cyber seems to be another of those areas that is impacted by cyber, where we need not necessarily regulate or rush to regulate and invent any brand new remedies. But we need to understand how the business and social processes work in this environment and adapt our existing systems to consider cyber and consider those new type of vulnerabilities. But what cyber really does change is the model our societies and nations are operating. In the interconnected world, we are far more dependent on partners and cooperation. Clearly, it's absolutely vital in this area and beyond, obviously.
And that is true with so many of the issues that we work with here at the NATO Cooperative Cyber Defense Center of Excellence. We know that the environment is changing faster than the national legislation, national policies even can, given the due process. So what we see over and over again is that nations in the end and private entities within those nations have a level of security and a level of stability that they need to operate in only if different agencies and players are able to talk to each other internationally and are able to, whether it's cooperate in developing measures or whether it's, you know the number whom to call in case of an incident or an emergency. That's the only way forward, and we see that over and over again in our research.
That's great, and what a perfect way to end this podcast interview. And for all of our listeners, you just heard an exclusive and very special Turning Point podcast interview with Lisa Past, who is the spokesperson for the NATO Cooperative Cyber Defense Center of Excellence, as well as Kadri Kaska, who's a researcher with the organization. And they were kind enough to share some insights on a very interesting new study that they put out about cross-border dependencies and how they create additional cyber vulnerabilities when it comes to infrastructure protection. And Lisa and Kadri, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Matt.